Hi, I'm Walter Isaacson, and I've written some big biographies, but now I've done a short book, and it's called The Greatest Sentence Ever Written. It's about the second sentence of our Declaration of Independence, the one that begins, "We hold these truths to be self-evident." Here are five key insights that are takeaways from the book. Number one, leadership is a team sport. Innovation, it's a collaborative endeavor. We biographers have a dirty little secret. We sometimes make it seem like a guy or a gal goes up to a garret or a garage and has a light bulb moment, and that's how innovation happens. But in fact, innovation, as most of you know from your own lives, comes from working together as a team, bouncing around ideas. You know, when we had our country in its founding, they had a great team. It wasn't just one great leader. You needed people like Jefferson and Madison, who were really smart. You needed to partner them with people like John Adams and Samuel Adams, who were filled with passion, and have somebody with high rectitude and great morality, totally respected, like George Washington. And you also needed a Benjamin Franklin, and his job was to put them together as a team, to bring everybody together. When they were writing that declaration in June of 1776, the Continental Congress decided not to just have Jefferson do it, but to have a committee, a team, put it together. It may have been the last time that Congress created a good committee. It had Jefferson and Ben Franklin and John Adams were among the people on it. And they sat there in a rented room that Jefferson had on Market Street in Philadelphia, using a mahogany laptop desk that he had brought with him from Monticello, and they went through page after page of revisions. They went through four major drafts of the Declaration of Independence. Nowadays, that first draft, which I find really interesting because it has all of their editing marks on it, that's in the Library of Congress. The final one, of course, as everybody knows, is in the National Archives and the big rotunda. I thought for our 250th birthday next year, they ought to display the different drafts all together. It's never been done that way before because the Library of Congress, you know, doesn't quite get along with the National Archives. But if for our birthday we could bring it all together, we could see how teamwork made our Declaration of Independence. So if you know anybody in Congress or anybody in Washington, tell them to make that happen for our 250th birthday. The second takeaway or insight is always revise and correct. Everything should be an iterative process, meaning you keep making it a little bit better, a little bit better. I remember when I was working on my book with Steve Jobs, sitting in his big family room at home as he pulled out bootleg tapes of the Beatles and how they made their different songs. And his favorite was a bootleg he had gotten of the many, many versions over and over again they made of Strawberry Fields Forever. And he would sit there and listen as John Lennon would start something and McCartney would try something else. And then somebody would chime in and they'd say, okay, let's take it from the top. Let's revise it and do it again. That was also true of Leonardo da Vinci. He didn't just paint the beautiful paintings. He started by making an underdrawing and a sketch and then charcoal and then filling it in some. And so it became sort of a cartoon that would be the essence of the painting. And then he would put brushstrokes on it and paint it in over and over, layer after layer of brushstrokes, usually in lightly pigmented oil. And so he could make those brushstrokes overlay each other. It took him more than a decade to do that with the Mona Lisa, as he perfected that most amazing smile ever painted, trying to just do version after version. And that was true of the great second sentence of the Declaration of Independence. Thomas Jefferson began the first draft of that sentence by saying, "We hold these truths to be sacred." And you can see Benjamin Franklin crossing it out with the black printer's pen that he used, using those heavy backslashes that printers use. And he crossed out, "We hold these truths to be sacred," and put in "self-evident." And his point was we were creating a new type of nation, one in which our rights were based on rationality, not the dictates or dogma of a particular religion. But then the sentence goes on, and it says, in Jefferson's first draft, they're endowed with certain inalienable rights. And John Adams puts in, they're endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. So you can see in the drafting and revising of just one sentence how our founders balance, something we don't do very well today, balance the role of divine providence in creating our nation and the role of rationality and reason. Insight number 3. Try to do the same thing with your own life, and perhaps we should do it as a nation. In other words, continually revise and correct our lives. Throughout his life, Benjamin Franklin kept a ledger of the mistakes he had made and how he had tried to rectify each one of them. It was sort of mistakes, and then on the second part of the page, it would be how he rectified it. The greatest mistake, he realized, was not just a mistake, not just an errata, but it was almost a sin, was that as a printer in Philadelphia, he had owned 2 slaves who worked in his shop. By the 1760s, they'd wandered off, and Franklin made no effort to prevent that. He even joined an organization that established schools for blacks and freed slaves and slaves in America. And his journey culminated by 1787, when he accepted, at age 81, which by the way was considered old back then, the presidency of the Pennsylvania Society for Promoting the Abolition of Slavery. And so you can see he was not a perfect man, but he kept trying to perfect himself. And the moral arc of American history, during its subsequent 250 years, mirrors the personal narrative of Franklin's life. As we head into our 250th, let's not just celebrate our goodness, or for that matter, just assail our flaws. Let's celebrate our ability to revise and correct ourselves when we get things wrong. For example, Abraham Lincoln opened his Gettysburg Address in 1863 by referring directly back to that second sentence of the Declaration. He said, 47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. At a cost of close to 620,000 lives, including 7,058 buried in that cemetery he dedicated that day in Gettysburg, the Civil War brought an end to slavery. The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice, Martin Luther King Jr. said, echoing an 1853 sermon by the abolitionist minister Theodore Parker. But it's important to remember the arc didn't bend itself. This was and remains a constant American struggle to make the phrase, all men are created equal, truly inclusive, to revise and correct our mistakes as we go along. Insight number 4. There'll be people who tell you in the graduation speeches or in pep talks to follow your passion. But my insight number 4 is it's not about your passion. It's about connecting your passion to something larger. When I graduated from college, I don't think I remember who the graduation speaker was, but I remember what the minister of the Memorial Church in our college said on that baccalaureate sermon on our graduation day. The name of the sermon was What We Forgot to Tell You. And he said that he had a student come up to him and he asked the student, what do you want to be when you leave college? And the student said, I want to be powerful. I want to be successful. I may even want to be president. And the Reverend Gomes said, aim higher. Our college has put out a lot of successful people and it's even put out a few presidents. But what it needs to do is put out more good people, people who connect their passion to the causes and the needs around them. Steve Jobs, when he was dying, sat in his back garden, and I asked him, what was it all about? And I thought he would, you know, have some great thinking about how the iPhone helped connect the world. And he said, no, what it's really all about is what my guru in India taught me. He said, life is like a river. And if you're very successful, you get to pull things out of the river. But at a certain point, near the end of your life, you realize it's not about how much you get to take out of the river. It's how much you get to put into the river. What ideas, inventions, thoughts, paybacks you've done that people in the future will be able to find in that river. Benjamin Franklin not only helped craft the sentence that defines our American creed, he lived it by putting things back in the river. He organized a police corps, a fire corps, a street sweeping corps, a public library, a hospital, and a school that became the University of Pennsylvania. He also created a widow's pension fund and a mutual insurance cooperative. He ran a newspaper that was dedicated to publishing a wide variety of opinions and following no party line. And on his deathbed, he bequeathed a revolving loan fund for young people to start enterprises. During his lifetime, he donated to the building fund of each and every church built in Philadelphia. And he helped lead the fundraising for a new hall that would provide a pulpit for visiting preachers of any belief, as he put it in the fundraising letter, so that even if the Mufti of Constantinople were to send a missionary to preach Mohammedism to us, he would find a pulpit at his service. And on his deathbed, he was the largest individual contributor to the Congregation Mikveh Israel, the first synagogue built in Philadelphia. So when he died, 20,000 mourners watched his funeral procession, which was led by all the clergymen of every faith in Philadelphia, including the local rabbi, walking arm in arm. That's what our founders were fighting for 250 years ago, and that's what we must continue to fight for today, so that we can preserve for ourselves and our posterity the rights and aspirations we all share, including to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Finally, number 5, hang together. When we were young, we were taught to all hold hands when crossing the street. That's still a good lesson for today, when we as individuals, and we, the people, as a nation, still have many dangerous streets we must cross. At the official signing of the Declaration of Independence, John Hancock, the president of the Continental Congress, wrote his name with his famous flourish. There must be no pulling different ways, he said. We must all hang together. And Benjamin Franklin replied, alluding to what would happen to them if their revolution failed, yes, we must indeed all hang together, or most assuredly, we'll all hang separately. As Franklin pointed out, our life or death challenge as a nation, whether it be in 1776 or 2026, is this: when there are so many forces dedicated to dividing us, how can we best hang together? Thanks for listening, and happy birthday, America.